Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the May 20th Sustainability and Resiliency Committee. I'm Commissioner Mark Samulin. I'm joined by my colleagues, Commissioner John Alamon and Joy Malikoff. Also, we have from the administration, Amy Knowles, Betsy Wheaton, and Yanni Pineda, and Rafael Paz from the City Attorney's Office. Let me just start with Betsy. Do you have any announcements, anything we want to share before we dive into the agenda?
Thank you, Commissioner. Yes, I want to announce that on Friday, May 31st, the city is going to be holding an event with the Arbor Day Foundation. It's going to be a volunteer tree planting where we're going to be adding trees to the park that were killed during Hurricane Irma. So we're very excited for this partnership, and anyone who would like to volunteer can reach out to the Environment and Sustainability Department for more information. It will be that morning, so we're looking to hold the event around 9 a.m. and anticipate it to be about 3 hours. So, and then we're also going to be scheduling another free tree giveaway later this summer for any residents that weren't able to make it to the tree giveaway last month. We had over 300 trees, which we were able to give away during that event, and that happened in less than an hour and a half. So there's definitely a demand out there.
That's a lot of trees per minute. It was it's a wonderful event. So thank you for sharing that, and thank you for everyone joining us today. So I think we're ready to dive in here. So Amy, would you like to start us with a review? Item number one, a review of our resiliency strategy work plan, please.
Sure, I'd be happy to. And this is the part of the meeting where we take a moment just to give some updates and five sort of routine areas, standing items. So the first one, meaning that it's been 3 years since we were selected by 100 Resilient Cities and the Rockefeller Foundation. And on Friday, we just sent the full resilience strategy to the printer. So that is completed, and the official kickoff is on May 30th, and that will be at the Perez Art Museum. And the elected officials, you all are very welcome to come to an 8:30 breakfast, and then that will be followed by a press release and then a full open house gathering. So we're very excited about that, and we will now focus on implementation. So this summer, we will be announcing the pivot team, where we're going to be shifting into an actual committee that will start small. It'll be comprised of the chief resilience officers from Miami Beach, Miami, and Miami-Dade County, and one appointed elected official from each city as well. So that implementation team will start with developing a work plan, because there is quite a lot of actions to get done, and they already have a to-do list, so we're really excited to shift into implementation. The next item is an update on the city's strategic plan. I know that Susie has been keeping you updated on our developing update, and it focuses on the city's vision, incorporating the commission's goals from the last workshops, some management objectives, as well as the city manager's performance contract items. And now there's two pieces that are now being entered in. The Resilient 305 actions that are very sort of pertinent to our Miami Beach, and also the community survey results that are now in. So those were the last two pieces, and that the strategic plan is being finalized and will be provided sometime this spring, summer. And we'll provide a little bit more information on that at the retreat tomorrow morning to help inform your priorities for the budget. The next item we have is the Urban Land Institute recommendations. At our last Ready Team meeting, we actually welcomed the Jacobs project manager so that we could have a full team sort of discussion and dialogue on the overall tasks and what's being done, and just to make sure every department could speak with them. So that was really beneficial to keep that communication going and for everybody to sort of be on board with that. And then I will skip to item five, which is an update on special projects, before I turn it over to CIP and Public Works. So just a couple items. For the business case analysis, those three types of modelings are underway. We are having weekly and biweekly meetings sometimes to discuss and confirm any assumptions and the data and looking at the baseline results. And we actually also had a meeting with the communicators. ICF, who is our prime firm, is actually a highly ranked global communications firm as well. And we're pairing our team with them as well as a local team to make sure that we are getting ready to communicate these results and we can tie it into our overall efforts. In terms of the community rating system, we were happy to receive an award by the county, just a nice proclamation for our great results there, and then we look forward to Wednesday night as well. Thank you, Commissioner, to really just celebrating those flood insurance savings. And then on other news, the National Flood Insurance Program was extended again by the House, and now it's going to the Senate. Hopefully, the intent is that it be passed before Memorial Day at their session, and that it would be extended throughout the end of the fiscal year.
So. That's great. Thank you, Amy. Members, any questions, comments on any of that?
On the projects report, but are we there yet?
We're going to go there just in a second. You okay for now, Commissioner Malikoff?
Yes.
Good. Next up, I think, is the projects report.
As we did last time, we provided the list of projects. As you had mentioned, you wanted to highlight some projects. So I was going to touch base on a couple, three of them that we didn't talk about last time, with some hopefully good news. To touch base on item project number five, which is the Middle Beach Recreational Corridor Phase 3 between 46th and 53rd Streets. I'm sorry, 25th and 53rd Streets. We had been waiting for quite a while for a permit from the state to get this project going, and happy to say that last week we received the permit from the state. So the next part of the process before we put it out to bid, which we are already working with them since last week, is working the details of the grant with DOT, which is a formality, really, at this point. They already have everything that they need, and now they are able to produce the letter that they give us saying, go ahead and bid the job. So we're waiting daily, every day now. I'm checking with staff to see when we get this so we can get the project out and get this going. So, and as a reminder, this is a GOB project. So that'll happen soon. Item six is North Beach Oceanside Park renovation. The project, that one's also on the waiting pattern from the state. However, we're preempting that, so we already have placed the project out for bid. So it's been out for a week or so, week or two. And I'll keep you posted on that, but we're getting a lot of interest in the project, so we're looking forward to that. One thing we are doing on that is we're preparing some collateral things to start presenting to the community before we award this project and bring it to you, as it relates to what we're doing in the park, specifically what we're doing with the trees and all that. So we will be happy to bring you, whenever we put that together in the next couple of weeks, we'd be happy to bring it to you if you so wish to see what that's going to look like. The other section of the beach walk that's under construction right now, we have scheduled a ribbon cutting for June 13th at 5 p.m. I hope that most of you can join us. We're trying very hard to see if we can open it officially before Memorial weekend. It's going to be up to the last minute type decision. They're wrapping up the last few things, including getting the lights to operational, but worst case scenario, it should be up by the following week and open to the public before we have our official ribbon cutting on that section. And with that, I'll open it to if you have any other specific questions on any of the other projects we haven't covered to this point.
Yes, item 10, Palm and Hibiscus Island neighborhood improvements. Mm-hmm. I read the update. By the way, I love the format. Thank you for the new list. Much appreciated. I'm a little bit concerned because I know that you encountered a lot of obstacles with the vendor, and you've been working through those and trying to expedite some of the common areas, but what's the status for the private drain tie-ins? Because I know that has been really difficult on Palm and Hibiscus, given some of the unique conditions of the, you know, skinny rights of way and shallow setbacks, and I don't think we've got all of the harmonization agreements signed yet. So I'm wondering, how are we going to make it to September 2019 on full completion if we have outstanding harmonization agreements, and how do we bring that, you know, what's your plan?
All right. So the challenge that we're trying to overcome at this point right now is not necessarily even having these agreements executed. The challenge is getting through the logistics of DERM. We had a meeting with DERM last week. They're wrestling with the things that we're doing and how does that fit into their normal procedures. That meeting generated some fact-finding and some due diligence, which they another meeting scheduled for tomorrow with them. So they understand this predicament that we're in, but they're also trying to get all their boxes checked along the way with their requirements. There's some logistical issues of how they typically look at how do you treat that 1.5 inches of rain before it enters? Is it the city? Is it the private property owner? How do you measure it? So we're going through that exercise right now. Until that, at the same time, the design builder has provided to DERM some a toolbox, a tool chest of some a product that are out in the industry and some other techniques to be able to address dealing with the 1.5 inches of quality treatment for the rain event. So they provided to that last week. We're hoping that this next meeting tomorrow we'll finally be able to come to terms of how do we move forward with them in their permitting process. Everybody's been sitting at the table. We have had not just our criteria, professional public works has been at the table, the design builder's been at the table, myself and others have been sitting at the table with them trying to work through this. And before we complete that process, we won't be able to move forward with the harmonization.
How many homes are we talking about that would like to have that residential tie-in that are affected and waiting for this to get resolved?
We're looking at some form of harmonization that could involve a drain in their property or some other mechanism somewhere in the ballpark of about 60 properties. But most of them on the west end of Palm Island. There's a handful on the west end of Hibiscus, but the majority is Palm Island, or where the coconut lanes are that we all know about.
While we're talking about that project, Dave, I know you had a community meeting and there was a lot of good dialogue. Can you just sort of bring to life any other issues besides the DERM permit that you'd like us to at least have some awareness of in terms of heading towards that September goal line here?
That's mostly the largest obstacle. The other things that are left to be done on the project, of course, is installation of the generators at the three locations. That's moving forward, and they're going through the process of the design and the ordering of the equipment. Another component is the landscaping of the center median on Palm Island and the smaller median on Hibiscus, and that's something that's partially funded by the GOB, and that's also moving forward without an issue. We're working through the undergrounding of Hibiscus Island and wrapping that up so FPNL and the other utilities can come in and start doing their work on that so that can happen. Those are really the biggest challenge really is just the completing everything on those two islands is getting through DERM and the harmonization. Everything else is just in a normal path for completion.
As you continue with the project and start new ones, you are, I hope, doing the landscape and tree plantings in mind in advance. There's this fear that you're going to cut down trees and then there's going to be no trees. And I hear that from different neighborhoods.
And then the idea is that our new criteria packages that are going to be put together by Jacobs would, of course, address all of that up front. We have that in the West Avenue project. That's there.
Right, but originally when these projects were started, trees were cut down, and then right away the contractors started, and there wasn't a plan for where they were going to be planted in the future and that they would be canopy trees, et cetera.
You're correct, Commissioner. The way that the criteria was in the past was the only landscaping that was involved is mitigation related. So if you take down one tree that has so much canopy, you replace it with this much canopy somewhere without necessary a plan or reason.
Right, good. So going forward, I have another question on item number 11, the stormwater pump station at 19th Street, east of Meridian. My question is really not about the pump station, but it says that it's in Middle Beach and 19th Street is in South Beach.
From my understanding, I believe that the demarcation line of Middle and South Beach is Dade Boulevard.
Oh, okay.
In the canal,
so it just 23rd Street. Maybe
so
it was changed.
That's from my understanding. I don't know if you all have any ideas, but that is my understanding that Dade Boulevard, a canal, separates Middle from South.
Okay, It used to be 23rd Street, so that's why I thought this was really in.
Mr. Chair, can I ask him another question?
Not in my
Okay. When she's finished. Not to pick on the Durham permit, but I'm not. I don't think I'm done there. David, the work that you're doing with Durham to get to come to a point of agreement on this permit, is that going to help with residential tie-ins in other neighborhoods, or is that only for Palm and Hibiscus?
The outcome of these meetings that we've been having is a global approach. So it's not exclusive to whatever issues we have on Palm and Hibiscus Island. So that is why we're all being so careful and making sure we look at this the right way, because it would affect other projects going forward.
Right. I'm sure you've shared with them the urgency that we have around Palm and Hibiscus and the need to finish those projects and get out of the neighbor's way, right? I mean, what can we do to help bring that to closure? Do we need to appeal to the county mayor? This is a county permit, right?
It is. I think tomorrow will be a relatively decisive meeting of what direction. And what they're looking at and what they're having a struggle with is when you do calculations, as I mentioned earlier, on how do you size a pump station, for example, the whole system. You design the pump station to handle a certain amount of water to basically get it out into the bay, and then you size the quality control, the quality structures to clean up a certain amount of water, which is not the same amount that the total amount, just that 1.5 inches of rain. So they're having a difficulty with their policies of how do you calculate that, and by that I mean public property versus private property, specifically residential, and how they're applying that. And there's some differences of opinion even amongst their own staff as to how that is calculated, because it makes a big difference in terms of how big the quality structures are and all that. So that's why I'm saying that affects any other project going forward.
Right, but we all know that while we're trying to figure out theoretically what that looks like when we have excessive rain events like we had last week,
Thursday,
that there are property owners that are, it's not theoretical to them because they don't have their harmonization. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that their, you know, finished floor is below the crown and they fall into our criteria for being deserving of a residential tie-in, they still don't have it. And that just puts a black eye on the program overall. You know, most residents, and then when that resident gets upset and puts something on social media, you know, you got a city's worth of residents that thinks that could happen to them too. Whether or not they fall into that set of conditions, they're not going to, they don't have enough information to determine whether that's going to affect them or not. And all that you're left with is fear. So we really have to wrap this up.
I think tomorrow will be a decisive meeting, and depending how that comes out, we may have to escalate it if need be, if we cannot find a resolution that allows us to move forward.
Okay. So if you can't find a resolution tomorrow, please advise the mayor and commissioners so that, you know, we can try to help.
Understood.
Sounds good. Just a quick one on number two, Indian Creek, and specifically related to the temporary improvements, current maintenance of traffic during the next 2 months. Just real quick status update, time frame for completion. What's the latest?
I'll have to turn that one over to Roy since Public Works is handling the interim.
Commissioner, those improvements are underway, and they're scheduled to be complete by the end of June.
Wonderful. Roy, while we have you, I had a couple things, but anything else on projects? No, we're good. Roy, can you just give to the committee the latest on Jacobs, their status, next steps, milestones, engagement with the commission, engagement with the community? The whole background would be great.
We did execute the first work order with Jacobs. Jacobs has gathered an amount of data from the city and is scheduling a kickoff meeting with staff to review that data next week is what they're trying to schedule it for. That's not been confirmed. and at that meeting we will lay out all the steps of at what's the appropriate time for the different stakeholders to become involved.
Okay, wonderful. So I think each month we'd love to just get a quick update, and I know I speak for myself. I look forward to that process unfolding and our opportunities to engage, and I believe the community does as well.
Thank you.
Anything on Jacobs? Because I want to...
I almost think, Mr. Chair, depending upon what you want to do, to me, when we had our standing report that you added, review of the Resilience Strategy Work Plan, really, what you just said is much more what I would be interested in hearing about every single time is like, where are we with each of the Jacobs task orders, and the program decision making and the status of that work, more than, you know, the highest level of the. Although I guess it doesn't even matter because we're about to print a report, so that will be done naturally. But I want to leave a standing item if you're willing, specifically calling out, you know, the Jacobs task orders.
No, I think that's a great idea. That is my intent. So however we best want to make that happen, I think that would be very helpful. Other thoughts on Jacobs? Anything we want to talk about at this moment on that one?
No.
I do have one other item for the next time, Roy. I understand, and maybe you can give us the one-liner on the water and sewer consulting work that's getting done. Obviously, there's a nice tie-in between some of that work and the stormwater, and I think that's something we want to be updated on. Could you just either, if you want to share the one-liner now or maybe next month, just give us a little overview of that?
No, happy to give you an overview. It's a little more than one line.
Okay, but, a couple lines are fine.
We started this process a couple of years ago of trying to determine what our needs were in water and sewer infrastructure. And we went out for an RFQ. We hired Hazen and Sawyer to be our consultant. The first thing Hazen and Sawyer recommended to us that we develop appropriate hydraulic models of our water and sewer system where we truly understand what our capacities are and our capabilities are, and then overlay that with future planning data from our planning department to see what our needs off in the future may be. So what Hazen and Sawyer has been working on up till now is developing those models. Concurrently, while those models are being developed, they've been performing and have performed condition assessments of things like our pumping stations, various infrastructure that's visible without excavation to give them some idea of our conditions, as well as reviewing our records as to how old some of our systems are just to get an age. We anticipate by the end of this year to have a comprehensive report from them on both the drinking water system and the wastewater system of a list of recommended infrastructure improvements prioritized with planning level estimates of cost. That's the high level view.
That's helpful. Now, you said the end of the year, and I'm just trying to connect the dots, because will that timing sync up well with the Jacobs work so we'll understand the stormwater infrastructure needs, the water and sewer, so that we could bring that together? Will those be in sync as you see it?
Our ask of Hazen has been to bring those major improvements that might be associated with the stormwater improvements, such as underground piping, maybe not so much a pumping station rehab that's not tied to a neighborhood improvement, but to bring those earlier rather than later to where we could use those needs as part of that matrix of prioritization that Jacobs is working on. Jacobs has been informed that they will be dependent on that information from Hazen and Sawyer on the criticality of water and wastewater components to feed into their matrix.
Okay, that sounds good. Let's also just sort of at least have that as a line item that if there's major developments or we want to spend a little more time on what they're doing, I think that's an important set of work that's underway. Members, anything else on those topics or anything else on this first item of our work plan? Are we good to go?
Good to go.
Thank you, Roy. Thank you, David. Item number two, discussion on City of Miami Beach stormwater, sanitary sewer, and water infrastructure best management practices. Margarita.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. Margarita Carief, Environment and Sustainability.
We give you these quarterly updates on our stormwater management program, and I'm happy to share that during the last quarter, our biggest milestone was having an interdepartmental meeting between City of Miami Beach staff and Durham leadership to discuss water quality. We met for about 3 hours to take a moment and look at all of the great strides that we have made over the last 5 years. I think sometimes we're moving so fast and making such big leaps that we forget to look back and recognize our accomplishments, but also to look at what action items we can target for the coming months and years that are going to take our stormwater management program to the next level. And in our memo, we've provided some examples of what those programs look like. For example, we'll be launching an education and outreach program to better train contractors working within the City of Miami Beach to make sure that we're reducing the amount of sediment, making it into the right-of-way and into our stormwater system. And we also identified a capital budget project that you will be seeing during the budgeting process to target some of that scouring that we've seen in documented in some of our outfalls. So with that, I'll leave it for any questions.
Members, any questions on any of this? No, this looks wonderful. I'm glad we're having these discussions. I guess my question would be, when will we see some of the results of these 20 actions? What, if anything, do you need to make this happen at this point?
Well, we can certainly continue to provide you updates within this quarterly update that we already have set in the agenda. Some of these items are very short-term. We've already tackled them. For example, we realized that we wanted better coordination with Durham as they're issuing permits for utilities dewatering within our city because they discharge into our stormwater system. That's already happening. That already took place. Some of these things, like this capital project that we are proposing for the budgeting process, is going to be a lot longer. It has to go through permitting. So I think that the best way to move forward is to continue to provide you updates as part of this regular quarterly update.
Commissioner Malik.
Yes, I just have a question about the last one that's listed here among the 20 action items, and that's the one about developing and implementing a plan to address scouring at select outfalls with recurring turbidity concerns. That's something we hear from our residents frequently. What is being done and what can be done?
So as I mentioned, we've put in a capital budget request for designing, permitting, and construction of some sort of stabilization at the outfall. What's happening is that as the water is leaving our outfalls, the Biscayne Bay sediment is very loose. So sometimes if you see a boat pass by, it'll actually cause turbidity very similar to what we're seeing at our outfalls. And what we would like to do is hire a consultant that can help us figure out what the best engineering solution is for stabilizing the bottom, getting it permitted, and getting it constructed. We know that at 10th Street, for example, we see something like that. At 6th Street, we see something like that, and we have a number of those outfalls where we know that that's the primary issue that we're seeing and that residents are recording, and this project we anticipate will help reduce the visibility of the turbidity at those outfalls.
We have one resident who continually writes that the reason that that's happening is because we don't have deep injection wells. Can you discuss that?
I would actually leave that to our public works engineers because that can get very deep. I don't know if, Roy, if you would like to talk about it, but we've given some really in-depth presentations from our engineers as to how we have processed deep well injections.
Before Margarita leaves,
please.
Before we get into the injection well conversation, this problem that you're trying to solve with the scouring at the outfalls, that's not going to be our problem only. That's not going to be a City of Miami Beach condition only. So how can we reach out across the state, maybe to academia, to some of the engineering schools, universities, even to the League of Cities? Like, how can we reach out for help? Because it has the potential. The R&D associated with solving that problem has the potential to be both expensive but also quite fruitful. You know, maybe we could get some help.
All coastal cities are going to have the same problem.
Every city around the coast is going to have that problem and need the same solution that we're trying to figure out. So this is one of those situations, I think, where because we're so far ahead of the rest of the coastline in dealing with these problems, we're finding problems that people don't even know they have yet. So how can we enroll others in sort of offsetting some of the expense of solving the problem?
I can share two things. One is that, fortunately, scour protection is not new, so there are a number of different options that we think we might be able to pull from in order to help us solve our problem, so it's not so much R&D as actually going through the permitting process. The reason why we feel that some of these outfalls are having this issue, if you notice, there's some of the earlier outfalls that we've built. For example, 10th Street, at the time that we constructed that outfall, we had conversations with the Army Corps of Engineers about the need to lower the elevation of some of that sediment and add riprap, so rock boulders in front of the outfall. And at the time, because we were bringing this and it was one of the first outfalls that we permitted, they weren't very amenable to it because it does have some environmental considerations. I think now that they see what we're seeing as well, they're a little bit more open to having those conversations. Separate from that, 100% agree that we need to be reaching out to different municipalities, not just with scour protection, but other forms of stormwater management and disposal and best management practices. And we actually have these statewide forums that we participate in, a Florida Coastal Resilience Forum, a stormwater statewide forum that we participate in, and we have been asking through those groups for assistance in dealing with some of our issues, recognizing that maybe there are solutions already out there or that we can band together to come up with solutions.
Okay.
And could you please repeat exactly which question you need to address?
There's a resident who continues to write that the reason for the scouring and all of this and that we're polluting the bay is because we don't have deep injection wells. And I remember a couple of years ago that they were not feasible to use here. But if you could just put on the record why we don't have them.
Commissioner, for the record, a few years ago our engineering team identified some existing wells that weren't productive or efficient. We do have a number of well structures in the city that are productive and efficient. They're located in our higher elevations. And in our lower elevations, our engineering team made the determination they weren't efficient and could not handle the volumes of water, especially during intense rain events to dispose of, and so outfalls became the common practice. Now, the outfalls are pumped outfalls, and they do produce movement of water, and that's causing the turbidity that some people are seeing that Margarita just described. Now, the city of Miami Beach has been a first mover in this whole space, and I think what you will find a few years ago, the regulators, specifically Corps of Engineers and folks like that, were very resistant to some of the proposals the city had, and after we have gone through the experience that we have, now they're much more amenable to having discussions of having these turbidity reducing scouring pads. So I think what you're seeing is a product of any first mover. You go through regulatory redevelopment, and this is just part of the process. And yes, we are a step ahead of other communities, and they won't find the resistance with the regulatory agencies that we found because we will have worked through it by the time some of the other communities get there. Now, with regard to the injection wells, our engineering team is working on concept plans of using combinations, a hybrid system of injection wells and outfalls. They've had meetings with Durham to discuss these concept plans, and Durham likes what they hear so far, a way to use them when they are productive during low tides and when the tides aren't permissive and they can't handle the water. Then we have the outfalls for the large volume, so that's underway. We don't have specifics, but we do have a concept that everyone's buying into at this point, so we look for constant improvements. When it comes to 6th Street particularly, what is being studied is a collaboration between the park project and the pump station that's located on that site, and building some underground retaining areas for that first flush for some pollution control. So we're very hopeful in the near future to have a real plan on how we can reduce pollution at 6th Street by using the park project.
That would be the park, the 3-acre park you're talking about?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, that good. Thank you.
Did that answer your question?
Yes. Yep. Thank you.
Roy, while we have you, I think that's a good lead. And unless my colleagues have anything else on the last item, I think that's next up here is the pump station plumes on West Avenue. I don't know who was going to present that, but looks like you got us going there.
Yes, I guess I basically blended those two together.
Yeah.
It has been identified that scouring is some of what is being seen, and scour pads could reduce that. That's what Margarita is leading the work on. And, of course, then also the other thing at 6th Street where we have seen what we suspect may be groundwater, and a way to prevent that groundwater from being pumped out is working on this concept plan of creating space in the park to where that first amount of water can be retained on site and back into the ground and reserve the outfall capacity for heavy rainfall events only. That is as what the hope is. Our engineers don't have a finalized plan. They started with a concept, carried it to Durham. Durham bought into it. Now they're developing how it would actually work to go back for approval. It's obviously going to take a little while.
Would it make a water feature in the park, like a lake or something?
That's not the current concept. The current concept is something underground where you would have a porous like a material and some voids through a structure that would hold water, where water could be pumped into that area and it be retained, and then if it's at high tides, it would hold it, and then at lower tides, it would allow it to percolate down and let that first amount of water go there. And that is to preserve green space. It was assumed that the community would prefer to have more grass and green than open water.
Thank you.
Sounds like we're working on the 6th Street one. My question is, do we see similar issues at any of the other pump stations, or do we feel that 6th Street and this issue that you just addressed, Roy, is sort of its own unique circumstances?
We do have different challenges at different areas. I think 6th Street is more unique to the fact that it seems to be the contributor of that dark groundwater. And what drives me to believing some of that, of course, is some of our oldest structures contributing to it back from the circa 1940s. Additionally, we have soil reports from the DOT that shows all of that soil for that whole area, they classify as the word muck, which is just a heavy organic material that's dark in color, and the water's just laying in there picking up that dark color from organic muck, they call it. That's their word, not ours, and it's infiltrating the system. That's a little bit unique there. When you get into other areas of our system, we don't have that same soil condition. We don't have quite as much muck in other areas, but we do have other areas that we have scouring, and that we've identified that. Our CIP team has identified it with Durham and our environmental team as well as operations, and we've showed that to Durham with them on site to get them on board with us to find ways to install scour protection. And so we do have scouring in other areas, and we're looking to eliminate that.
Okay.
I only had one other question, and I'm looking at Margarita because I know that we've spent a lot of work looking at natural elements like mangroves to be able to assist with our program. When you're looking at these scouring pads and as you talked about excavating and putting in riprap, have we looked at all at possibly planting oysters to help with? I know it sounds so silly, but planting oysters to help with water quality and cleaning.
We can certainly revisit that conversation. As I think we had mentioned at last meeting during the Living Shorelines presentation, the oysters that grow within Biscayne Bay aren't the kind that are known to improve water quality and build reefs. We're happy to definitely look at it again and see if maybe in this particular application it might be useful. But from what I understand, our ecological conditions are not conducive to that type of oyster.
It's a different
species. A different species.
Maybe
yeah.
we could try stone crabs.
I would love that as a stone crab lover.
Okay. Anything else? No. All right. So we'll move on. Thank you very much. We'll move to item number 4. Discuss the use of pesticides, herbicides, and fertilizers on both public and private properties. Sponsored by Commissioner Aleman.
Take it away.
All right. So during last month's meeting, we had gone through different policies and landscape maintenance practices that the city uses to reduce the impact of pesticides, fertilizers, and herbicides on our public properties. And one of the questions that you had asked that I was unable to answer at the time was regarding the city of Miami and other municipalities or county governments that may have passed bans on private properties. So we did some substantive research, and it sounds like within the state of Florida, municipalities are preempted from passing pesticide and herbicide bans on private properties. So the different ordinances that you have heard of, including the city of Miami, is specific to what the city of Miami Beach already has in place for public property use. However, we did find that for fertilizers, there are a number of counties and cities throughout the state that have passed ordinances restricting the use of fertilizers during seasonal periods. So, for example, right now that we're in the rainy season, they have restricted the total use of fertilizers within these particular areas, including Manatee County, Pinellas County, Lee County, Martin County, and other cities. Similarly, the city of Boca Raton also has an ordinance limiting the use of fertilizers. Theirs is more focused on specific amounts and times. So, for example, they restrict fertilizer application when 2 or more inches of rain are forecast in 24 hours. So our recommendation, because there seems to be a variety of different ordinances, was maybe to get direction from you if you are interested in passing some sort of ban, for us to work with our city attorney's office to determine what ordinance we can draft that would meet our needs here within the city of Miami Beach based on what's currently available within the state.
I'd like to do it if it has the support of the committee.
I would be supportive. It looks like we found some examples. It looks like it's tailored. So, you know, pending a review of the actual language, conceptually, I'm supportive. Commissioner Malikoff, do you want to weigh in?
I'm supportive. I think the purpose is that when, during rainy season, the fertilizer runs off into our water basin. Is that the idea?
That's correct. So it doesn't allow enough time for the fertilizers to really be utilized by the sod or whatever landscaping, and so it's more likely to run off and cause an issue with water quality.
I would think that they'd be much more effective when they're placed during the winter months when there isn't much rain. I'm in support.
Commissioner Alamam, would you like the ordinance to be brought to the committee? Do you want to go to commission?
No, we can bring it. You want to bring see it here? Back here?
Okay.
So that everyone has a chance to weigh in on it, and we can discuss the details of sustainability.
Sounds good.
Perfect. Thank you so
Wonderful.
Much.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Hopefully that will also encourage the use of Florida friendlies, as we've tried to do. It's just another thing, you know, to encourage folks to use.
It's also
another beneficial plantings.
Yeah, and it's another nice step for a lot of the activity that we're taking as it relates to water quality that I'm not sure, the public doesn't have the opportunity to see as much. So I think anytime we can be talking about those initiatives, I think it's a positive. Very good. Item number five.
I'm sorry. I just thought of one other thing. I know that, there's services. There's fertilization services like True Green is a commercial company that offer. So we'll have to think about that in terms of the ordinance is how we would notice those types of companies of what these blackout periods are, if that's the route we go down.
Commissioner Alamon, we had done some brainstorming and thought that another potential option and avenue to get the word out, even pre-ordinance, would be to put together an info sheet that we could provide to landscape contractors and contractors who are providing these services that specifically target Biscayne Bay, the fact that our runoff goes to Biscayne Bay, so that these chemicals that they place, if not placed properly, do go to the bay system. So that's something that we could initiate sooner than later.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Very good. So we'll move on then now to, let's see here. We're going to take up item number five. Consider adopting World Sea Turtle Day on June 16th every year in the city of Miami Beach, creating turtle-friendly activities to commemorate the occasion. Commissioner Alamon is sponsoring this item.
Yes. Well, you know I love the turtles and have taken the turtle advocates under my wing and really always tried to address whether it's lighting code enforcement issues and signage and other sea turtle awareness items, and learned that there is a World Sea Turtle Day. It's coming up. It's on June 16th. And I thought that would be a great thing that we could leverage and talk to staff about it. So maybe do you want to share some of the ideas that we came up with to celebrate?
Sea Turtle Day. The idea.
Costumes.
We can. Yes, I didn't find any turtle costumes for us, but I certainly would do that by Sea Turtle Day 2020. Hmm.
So one of the ideas that we did some additional research was creating a sand sculpture on Sunday, June 16th, that would bring awareness, and it could be something that would be branded Miami Beach and be an Instagrammable moment at the beachside. We were thinking that along the Loomis Park walkway would be a great location. Here is some images that we received from the sculptor who is available on the 16th. This is an image of sea turtles that they this individual did for Hutchinson Island. They went more for the cartoon route, really fun. So that's something that we could go, or we could go more realistic, and we definitely, if you'd like to move forward with a sand sculpture for June 16th direction on if you want it to be more fun and kid-like or more realistic in nature. We would like to show the various stages in the life cycle, so have an adult sea turtle as well as some babies and hatchlings, because that's such an important part of the life cycle here on Miami Beach. But yes, this is presented for your consideration. Another item I do wanted to mention, we do have the concrete large sea turtles up at Allison Park. Something that we're exploring is establishing similar type sculptures that would actually be sea turtle eggs that we thought would be interesting to place at other sections along the beachwalk. So we've been working to get some quotes and some ideas, but we think that could be an interesting way to engage people walking along the beachwalk about that important stage of their life cycle.
So a question, in terms of the cost of the sand sculpture, because I love the idea of having a sea turtle branded Miami Beach sand sculpture in Loomis Park, whatever the right location is, I'm sure you would find. How much does that cost? Is that something that can be accommodated within the budget or...
Yes, it costs about $2,000 for the full sculpture, which would include the branding of Miami Beach as well as the baby sea turtle and the larger sea turtle. And that would be something that we would pay for out of our promotions budget. So we do budget every year a set amount of money that we use to for education and outreach specifically related to sea turtles. So we would tap into that portion of our budget to, and then just redistribute how we were going to be doing that education and outreach.
I think it's a really it's a fun idea. It's a chance for us to educate and inform, and also, as you said, create something really, really cute and fun that would be shared throughout social media, which would both promote awareness of sea turtles, but also of the city of Miami Beach, and shine a good spotlight on the city. So I think we get a multiple benefits out of it.
I agree. I like it very much. It's a fun idea of a serious topic, and it's one we take seriously, so it's a great way to bring it. So I appreciate you bringing it forward. What would you like us to do today to, unless Commissioner Malacafia want to weigh in any way, what would you like us to do to get the ball rolling here?
I think just your blessing for us to move forward, and we'll move forward with finalizing the event with the sculptor and the details with our communications department.
Perfect, perfect. In terms of the mood of the piece, I think between, you know, working with communications, you all can sort that out in a way that's consistent with the brand. So, so moved.
That's great. By acclamation.
Great. Yes.
Wonderful. Okay, we have, I believe, one last item. It was an addendum, item number 16, review city performance programs and improvement opportunities that pertains to litter in cleanliness, and I'm the sponsor of this one.
We're going to hear from the Sustainability Committee.
Too. Deferred.
Okay.
Hello, good afternoon.
Welcome back, Sarah.
Thank you. From Code Compliance. Let's see. While I was out on March 20th, you all had a SRC meeting where administration was asked to evaluate residential concerns for contractor negligence, and you requested some recommendations. So from that, I took a look at the types of complaints we've been receiving. We received complaints through a variety of methods, whether it be the eGov app. Folks can call in to our 604 city number, and then also they can call the code compliance number. pulling the data for the past few years, I only was able to locate 35 complaints related to this. And these are not necessarily specific to just residential, but I tried to narrow it down as much as possible. So this includes complaints regarding, let's say, dirty water flowing from the construction site, as well as when damage has occurred or if they've left trash, debris, markings, things like that. I also went through and pulled some violations that we've issued. They're mainly sanitation violations because that's the method we have to cite with that hold fines, which is really what is kind of catching of attention. But so through that, I would definitely say that we've identified some opportunities for improvement, especially in letting our residents and neighbors know how to report these issues. And then also maybe some opportunities for us to reinforce or remind these contractors what the rules are. Because when it comes to enforcement, it's kind of not really one size fits all. Ultimately, the property owner is responsible for the condition of their property and the swale abutting it. However, we understand that there are contractors sometimes working on these houses and they leave debris behind when they have lunch. We have cited before for litter when they have their lunch and they leave their trash just around. We've also cited when they leave debris, construction debris in the swale, things like that. It gets a little bit trickier, though, when they damage private property. And so what we do in those instances, and I think a more recent example was around, I believe it was 10th and Washington. It was the Best Western Hotel getting renovated. And I guess when the contractors were turning a corner, they kept crunching the sidewalk until it was just completely crunched down. It happened to be a private sidewalk. But in that instance, we went out and we documented it through pictures and gave them not a case number, but an inspection number so that they would have something from the city kind of official to reference this damage when they went against the construction bond. So we do offer that as a courtesy to our residents, and it could be code compliance that does it. It could be building a public service aid. It could really be a variety of folks that work here. So, again, when it's on private property, that gets a little bit tricky. Now, when we have someone call and say, "There's my neighbor's house is being worked on, and X, Y, and Z, you name it, whether they've messed up the swales or they've left trash," we go out and we investigate. Ultimately, we're looking for compliance, so we do often go try and speak with the contractor. In situations where we can clearly identify, yes, it was this contractor, we most certainly cite them. Unfortunately, though, in some instances, when people wait too long to call, and then we go out there and it doesn't really appear that there's any work being done anywhere, it ultimately falls to the homeowner. So I would recommend that people contact us as soon as possible, as soon as they start noticing something, because we can at least get out there, and if there's not a violation yet, we can certainly speak with the contractors and remind them and let them know there are concerns. I know with a lot of the residential construction that's happening, there's not many parking options for them because properties are being built out so far. So that is something that, unfortunately, as they park along the swale, they start to create those divots, and then it rains, water collects, now it's a muddy mess everywhere. So it's certainly something that we can look to work with Public Works and Building and some of the other departments to perhaps put steps in the process to, again, reiterate that, you know, you need to be keeping these areas clean, and then potential other ways we could enforce it.
Responsible contractors seem to do it. I know of two in our neighborhood where there are new single-family homes being built, and there was a neighbor complained and told me about it, of course, and the construction was doing just what you said. The trucks were making big gullies in the ground, and water was settling there, and the contractor put down white, he smoothed it out and put white stones over the whole front. So mm-hmm. now it's absolutely clean.
Yeah.
So it's just a question of we have good contractors and some that are not as good. But I think it's important for residents to know if you see something, say something quickly so mm-hmm. that code compliance or whoever can go out and make sure the contractor respects the neighborhood.
Right, right. And absolutely. We think, you know, getting out there and speaking with them usually gets them to take notice. No one wants a fine. So we work closely also with Public Works, who have field monitors in the field, and they'll contact us when they see something. And there are instances where they're told, yes, absolutely, put down some rock so that you don't have the mud and all of that happening.
Yeah. I think you definitely hit the issues as I was envisioning it, that some contractors, maybe the less good ones, were causing problems. Residents weren't able to resolve it. If I'm hearing you right, Sarah, it's two levers we have. One is to make sure that residents know how to quickly get that word to us so we can address it. And then the front end, making sure our messaging, communication, training to the contractors, which also came up, I think, about some of the water quality, is reinforced. So I think directionally that sounds right to me. Commissioner Alamon, do anything you want to add?
No. You know, when I was knocking on doors in 2015, this was a huge complaint, you know, swale destruction by neighboring residential projects. And so I think it's important for residents to know that if their neighbor has a project going on and their neighbor's contractors are parking on their swale, to call code right away and at least get the report in. You know, maybe the remediation doesn't happen until the end of the project, but at least it'll be on the nickel of the person that had the project, not on their unwitting neighbor. But if they wait and they don't report it and then the project's over and everybody goes home and that swale has been destroyed, it falls on the property, the adjacent property owner. And that's, I think, when people can get upset, right? So... Yeah. Your message is clear that folks need to call early, or I guess they can report it through the eGov app. Either way, right?
Right,
and you'll go out there and check on it for them.
Right, and I believe Ann is here from building, but I know that they do inspections prior to closing out a job, and so if there's nothing really on the file, so to speak, we don't have anything logged that there have been complaints about this site. I'm not really sure how their process works. She could speak to it, but... It would, I'm sure, be helpful if we had that information so that we could have it documented.
You know, Anna, it's not a bad training item either for the inspectors that go out. No matter what they're going out to inspect for, you know, they ought to take a moment, look around, put themselves in the neighbor's position, and see if there's anything that they can offer some constructive criticism about while they happen to be there.
Yeah, thank you. One of the things I wanted to mention, Commissioner, is that there is an ordinance that's passed. It's the parking management plan, and parking are the ones that enforce that. And any project that's over $250,000 has to have a parking management plan that's approved, and they can't just say they're parking in the swale. So the department that actually enforces that, if they're not using the correct plan, is the parking department, are the ones that are going out and enforcing any parking issues.
That's an interesting point, because I wouldn't want a resident to have to know that.
Not right. The resident. I think when they call 311, I think it'll get referred either to code or to parking, depending on what the issue is. But if the issue is parking in the swale, parking does go out, and they have their own enforcement for that. And that's pretty much what the parking plan is about, is to make sure that you don't just have people planning on parking on a neighbor's yard throughout the life of the larger projects.
Nevertheless, you know, they will.
Yeah.
They will. They'll also leave their garbage and their lunches and their chicken bones and their Coke cans and everything else littered around the neighbor's property. So at any opportunity,
especially chicken bones that then dogs pick up.
That's really true. So at any opportunity that there is city staff on site for whatever reason, if everybody could sort of have approach to to being there. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
That makes sense.
Thank you.
So, Sarah, I think the recommendations you presented, you know, again, that twofold approach makes sense. I think it's responsive to what we discussed. Is there anything you need from us? I think we would like to see it happen, but is there anything else you need from us? I think we're ready to sort of move on here.
No, I think based on the direction, I can work with the other departments and see if we can improve some of our communication, and hopefully it'll go both ways. The residents will know how to communicate to us, and we'll know how to communicate to everyone.
Wonderful. So I'm happy at this point. We'll close this out. If the issue resurfaces and we need to revisit, we can.
Okay,
thank you very
thank
much.
You.
Great. I believe that's everything on the agenda, unless any of my colleagues or anyone else has any announcements.
Nope.
Meeting adjourned. Thank you for all joining us. Stop.